to serve God or in my life with Him should really flow out of abiding with Him and dwelling with Him, sitting at His feet, rather than trying to work hard and do all this kind of stuff so that I can rest, so that I can feel like I've done a good job.
Welcome to Formation Conversations, a podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. We're having an ongoing conversation with friends about what it means to be formed into the image of Christ. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome back to Formation Conversations, a podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. I'm Ted Wiese, one of your hosts, and also the director of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona.
And my name is Gray Ewing, and I am the senior pastor at Ascension Church of Phoenix, and longtime partner with my friend and mentor in many ways, Ted Wiese. And we just delight to do this podcast together. It's a great excuse for us to be together in person. We like to, as much as we can, actually be together for these kinds of conversations. And normally, we're sitting next to each other and looking at a computer screen across the way at someone else who's on Zoom joining us from some other part of the country to have a formation conversation with that person. Today, actually, Ted and I are sitting across from one another with a mic in between us because today we are the ones being interviewed, and we thought this would be a fun change of pace for us to interview someone else from the outside, but to sit across from one another and catch up on what the Lord has done, what He maybe is doing in our own journeys of spiritual formation. And I wonder if there's an audience for that. I don't know, Ted. What do you think? Do you think people are wondering who these people are and are curious about this? Or do you think this is a self-indulgence? I don't know.
Well, we'll see. We'll check the stats after we put these out and see if everybody listened and if they did, great.
Yeah.
But as we are planning these next podcasts, I was thinking, we need to interview one another. Like, we haven't done that. We know bits and parts of each other's stories for sure, but I don't know that we've done that in the way we put it on the podcast. And story is just so important. And when we think about formation and our formation story, how has God been at work? It just felt like it'd be a great thing for us to explore with one another. And it hit me again the other day, the importance of stories. At the ASU football game, and they do a thing at every football game, and it's called My Sun Devil Story. And they have someone up on the Jumbotron or whatever they call it, you know, saying, "This is my Sun Devil story." And it'll be some way in which they've interacted with ASU and the Sun Devils and the football team or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much joy in that, because as someone sitting there in the stands as a fan, you're like, well, me too. You know, I have my story of why this is significant. And so I hope that as we share these things, there'll be people that will listen and say, me too. And it'll even prompt thinking through, what is your formation story? How has God been shaping you? How is He shaping you? How is He with you in this moment? So I'm excited about these next couple of episodes.
Me as well. And this will be, I guess, an opportunity for an extended episode that we will cut into two parts. Is that the plan? And part one and part two. And I'm looking forward to it because I feel like I know you pretty well, Ted. But there's going to be some surprises in your story. I'm sure of that. So
we'll see. Likewise.
You brought some food.
I brought some food. So our daughter, Claire, not Gray and I's daughter, but my wife, in front of, the way I said that, it came out weird. My daughter, Claire, started working as a manager at this new restaurant called The Delicatessen in the Paradise Valley area. And it's super good. I mean, they have this build your own bagel bar with these really great bagels. They make fresh there every day. They have these chopped sandwiches, all kinds of other deli kind of things you can imagine in a New York style deli. And today I got us a couple of chopped sandwiches.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it. And it's funny, Ted, just last week, you know, you can save videos on Facebook or save, you know, recipes that people pop up. And I have a little list of recipes to try. And there is a chopped sandwich recipe that I saved only last week. if you don't know what a chopped sandwich is, it's basically like all the ingredients of a sandwich and then chopped up and blended together rather than, you know, kept separate. So the lettuce and the tomato and the bacon or whatever else is on it is all chopped up together. And you add the mayo in as almost like a salad, right?
Yeah, they mix it up in a bowl and then pull it out and put it together in the...
It's a more efficient way to enjoy a sandwich,
yeah, I guess you'd say. I'm excited.
So you got... I got antipasto.
I got the chicken cutlet Caesar.
All right. Well, we're going to enjoy these sandwiches, and we'll pause the discussion for a moment while we do that, but we'll see you on the other side of the break. Back from our break, Ted, what was your view of the sandwich? You brought them. You already praised them a little bit. So
yeah, so good. Yeah. That chopped sandwich, there's just something about eating it where it's all kind of mixed together and chopped up on some really good hoagie kind of sub roll. Really good.
I wanted to talk about the bread. The bread was key for me because it was kind of that hoagie style. It wasn't the pure French, like soft bread. But it actually worked for the sandwich to be a little harder, I think. Like, it was really good with sesame seeds on the outside, kind of a strong, hard bread flavor. I don't know. I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, but it wasn't hard to eat, right?
No, it was so good.
And one of the things I know, because I'm kind of an insider at this place, because with Claire being a manager there, is they have a guy from France who bakes all their bread every day. So it's always fresh, always good. So in fact, he came up to her the other day and said, Mademoiselle, blah, 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 blah.
Really funny. Well, I ate 3/4 of it. I'm going to give the last quarter to my wife, not because I couldn't finish it right now, but because I'm showing restraint and love in doing so, because she's going to love it. So thank you for the sandwich, Ted.
Yeah.
And thank you for being our guinea pig for this experimental episode. And this is part one, where we're going to dive a little bit into your story. And yeah, I think we'll probably take too long to do the full biography, you know, for either one of us today. But maybe you could take us back to your pre-spiritual formation days, to kind of growing up and that kind of stuff. And maybe, you know, one of the questions sometimes asked in direction is like, what was your view of God, you know, during those times, or how did you relate to God? Maybe that would be a good question, maybe not, but like, tell us about kind of the early days of you before you're kind of in this formation walk that you currently have with Christ.
That is a great question to think about your view of God. I haven't thought about it in quite that way in a little while, but I think for many people, they're drawn to a relationship with God, either because they're drawn to his love or to the truth of what they're being confronted with in the gospel, for example. And for me, it was like the truth of it. I grew up in a very loving home, parents that I felt very secure with and that kind of thing. So I don't necessarily think the love of God is what initially drew me. But I remember when I first heard the gospel at 16 years old, and I heard the gospel and I was like, that's true. I just know that's true. And I was drawn. And so I think in many ways, my early life as a follower of Jesus was about the truth. It was about knowing the truth, understanding everything about the truth, and very word-centered. I was discipled and grew up in a tradition that, I mean, it was a Bible church. That was, Bible was in the name of the church. So
kind of, what other kind of church would you be, right? It's like, they have the Bible, right?
Yeah. So that was very much what formed me in those early years, was the scriptures. And I'm so thankful for it to this day, because I love the scriptures and I love spending time reflecting on, meditating on, studying God's word. So I would say I was very drawn to the truth of God. And because of that, this is a long story to get to your question, but my view of God, I think, was really that he was the truth. And my responsibility was to serve him. And so I don't know that I thought about God in a very personal way, to be honest. I would have used the language of a personal relationship,
right,
with God through Jesus Christ. I used that kind of language, but I think I saw God more in terms of truth and
like a concept, like a concept that was true.
Yeah. And then what I was supposed to do is serve him and help other people understand the truth.
Right.
And so I wanted to be a good worker, a good soldier, a good servant.
Mm. Yeah. So maybe not quite so coldly philosophical as like Aristotle's unmoved mover. There's this concept of God out there, more personal than that. But it sounds like for you, for the most part, it was the concept of God, which is a truth that then sustained you in some kind of way because you were looking for the truth. And so that's a good thing, right? Because God is the truth.
Yeah.
And among other things, right? So let's talk about that among other things, right? So you reference it as something of the past. You haven't left the scriptures behind, presumably.
Right.
The Bible's still good and important. What shaped and developed you from there, like in terms of how did you grow in your concept of those things?
Yeah, I think to put it in the language of the scriptures, in John 1, it says that Jesus was full of grace and truth. And so I think as I got later into college, and then especially when I was in seminary doing those studies, I began to really be confronted with the grace of God and understanding that and being drawn to that. And I think it was at that time that I started to develop some categories, but still probably pretty head-oriented, but some categories of God's grace. And so I think then in the ensuing years, I began pastoring, planted a church in my early 30s, and it was through that season that everything outwardly was going well. I mean, I had done well at this church. At the first church where I served, I completed a doctorate, planted a church. And at the same time, I would say internally, in my internal world, I was uncertain about some things. And it really probably came around to, I believe certain things about God and about the gospel, that it's transformative. And I wasn't sure that I was experiencing the transformation that I believed theologically happens when we're in Christ. And so in some ways, that type of transformation felt kind of elusive to me. Because I knew all the Bible verses, I knew the theology, I knew the right behaviors, but there was something at the heart level that I wasn't sure was being transformed. And a lot of it showed up in my marriage, where I wanted to love Jennifer well, but I didn't know how to experience a change in my own heart that would allow me to love her well. I would say I was probably a workaholic, working way too much and being affirmed for it, because the more I worked, the more I was serving God, and the more people would look at it and say, that's great, that's good. And so in a lot of ways, I was being affirmed for some unhealthy things.
Mm-hmm.
And then not encouraged in some of the more healthy things. Like I don't think I ever had someone else in church leadership ask me, tell me about your life with God right now. It might have been something like, what are you learning about God? But how are you experiencing him right now? What's happening in your life with God right now? Are you growing? Are you, you know, those kind of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't necessarily come up in a heart-centered kind of way. And so through that period of just asking the question, what does it mean to experience transformation? I started meeting with a counselor who was probably part counselor, part spiritual director. And I really began to open my heart in ways that I wasn't even aware that my heart wasn't open. And that's really what began a lot of my formation journey, was realizing that I needed to do my own kind of soul work. I needed to pay attention to my interior life in ways that I just wasn't equipped to do.
It's a common story, I think, for a lot of people. I just kind of want to name some of those things because people who are listening to this might have similar feelings along the way. I think one of the things that you're describing is this kind of view of God and view of the Christian life that is somewhat transactional, you know, which is basically if I'm I pledge to God that I will do the inputs, you know, whatever those might be, the inputs of the Christian life. Bible, service, working hard, sharing faith, whatever it may be, any combination of those things. And then for God's part and his return to us, I guess, in some kind of way, he blesses us with, you know, happiness and joy and spiritual growth. And if I do those things, then I'll get those things on the other side. And the truth is that it doesn't really align at all with what the scriptures describe the Christian walk to be like. It's not that kind of transaction. And yet, so for some reason, many of us, most of us, have kind of gone down that pathway of viewing it that way. Is that accurate to say of kind of some of what you were experiencing, at least, like, I need to do these things, and the Lord will give me these other things, he'll provide in other ways?
I do resonate a bit with that transactional idea, because I think that's the nature of relationships in our world and relationships that we grow up with. If I'm a good little boy, I get a pat on the head. If I'm not, I have to go sit in my room by myself. And that's a very simplistic description, but that kind of describes relationships. So I do think there's an element at which I brought that sort of transactional view into relationship with God. God would be happy with me if I'm doing things right. And the other interesting thing is, like, I would never have affirmed or thought that I received the gift of salvation by something that I did.
Right.
But yet, what it meant to live the Christian life was something that was really something that was up to me, that I had to perform. I had to make it happen. And there's a verse in Galatians, and it basically says, what you began with faith are you now trying to perfect in your flesh? Mm-hmm. And I think that describes really well a lot of how I was doing things without even probably fully realizing it. And it took me, in some ways, coming to a place of desperation to realize it just wasn't working. And I knew there had to be something more. I knew there had to be something different than what I was experiencing. And it didn't make me think that there was something more than God. It just made me think, I'm missing something. And I think that's part of, through my journey of counseling and then into formation, I started to hear things and read things that gave words to what I was experiencing.
Well, let's talk about that transformation a little bit. You said a couple of things earlier, more noticing, I think you said, or internal looking at yourself. You mentioned spiritual direction and counsel and these types of things and reading things. What were some of those things, and what about them stirred you?
Well, you know, one book that I remember early in my, in kind of this part of the journey, was a book by Henry Nouwen, and it was called One Necessary Thing. And it's basically a whole book that was riffing off of the account in Luke where Mary and Martha are interacting with Jesus. And, you know, Mary's sitting at his feet, and Jesus says to Martha, who's complaining that Mary's not working, we know the story, what you're doing is great, but you've missed the one necessary thing. And I remember reading that, and it's just really striking me in a very different way. It wasn't that I hadn't read that passage or spent time with it before, but what really struck me is, in many ways, I was missing that one necessary thing. And it was just simply sitting at the feet of Jesus. And all my works were fine, and all the things I was doing for God were fine, but I was being shaped in such a way that I was wanting to sit with Jesus, and for that to be the foundation of what I was doing. And rather than trying to do all these things to feel approved by Jesus or to feel patted on the head. And that kind of paradigm shift was huge for me to realize that anything I do to serve God or in my life with Him should really flow out of abiding with Him and dwelling with Him, sitting at His feet, rather than trying to work hard and do all this kind of stuff so that I can rest, so that I can feel like I've done a good job. And that was the cycle I was kind of caught up in a lot of ways.
As you think about your ministry now and your life now, in some ways, I guess this is kind of a two-pronged question. For your ministry and such, how's that, what you just described, that view, and obviously the Lord has done a good work in you in those regards, and you probably notice all the ways that He hasn't completed His task, right? But we all see it, you know, in you someone who embodies those things, someone who's abiding with the Lord first and foremost, and then working out of that sense. What would you say to pastors, who, for instance, who are listening to this, who think like, I can't be like this and be in ministry, or a spiritual director who's like, I can't, I still have too much desire to control other people, or, you know, those types of things. And how have you learned to walk, I guess, is the ultimate question, while doing a lot of work, because you still go all over the place and lead retreats and do all this stuff. How have you learned to walk in this kind of abiding and knowing that the one thing necessary is leading you, while also accomplishing, you know, a good bit of things? And what would you say? What comes to mind?
Well, I think at one level, a contemplative life will always lead to action. An active life won't necessarily lead to contemplation. And so, you know, is it really hard to and difficult and challenging to live a contemplative life where you sit at the feet of Jesus and letting things flow from that? Yes, because everything in our world conspires against us. That's not the world we live in. It's not what's modeled. It's not what's in a lot of our churches. When I was pastoring, the last job that I had serving in a local church, I was over the staff, and I would make people on our staff take a day off. And I can remember one of the guys, he would say, but I don't want to take a day off. I love doing this. And so it led to a conversation about, okay, that's great, but you need to take a day off so that you can sit at the feet of Jesus, so you can let yourself rest. And what I noticed in this one person and others was sometimes in ministry, there's a compulsion to do more. And sometimes it's so that I can feel better about myself. Sometimes it's so that I can maybe finally get that affirmation. Sometimes it's all these things. And so there are a lot of cycles, a lot of patterns, a lot of habits that we may experience in ministry. And, yeah, it can feel impossible to break out of those cycles. And until you're ready to do it, you're not going to do it. But when you're ready and you can say, this is what we're doing, it can happen.
There's that moment of, this isn't working anymore, right? The Lord is gentle about those things, and sometimes forceful too, right? When you reach a breaking point, you can't do anything else. But sometimes you just realize, man, I don't know if I can keep doing this like this. And I'm sure there's people who are listening right now that are in that spot. Yeah, that,
and I think
that's an invitation.
Yeah, I think the important thing is to reach out for help, to ask somebody, hey, will you help me? Will you pray with me? Will you help me think through how to talk to the leadership in my church and tell them that I need some time off, or I need to change some of the patterns of how we do things. I think one of the things that I see in the many churches in our culture today is a lot of competitiveness, a church trying to keep up with the church down the street, a lot of comparison, and then a lot of just action that comes out of what it's assumed a church should be doing rather than what the Lord is inviting. And that requires a very different cadence of pastoral leadership, ministry leadership, board leadership, however it works at a particular church, to say, we are going to live in such a way that we're aware of how God is with us and what he's calling us to. And then we will, with abandon, respond to him. And it's hard in an Instagram, TikTok world to simply live in the awareness of God and responding to him and not thinking that, well, you know, Grace Church is having a harvest festival, so I guess we need to have one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or this church is doing that, or what are we going to do to get young people, or what are we going to do to get old people, or what are we going to do? And it's a lot of what are we going to do too, versus, Lord, what are you doing, and where are you inviting? And it sounds kind of simple, but it's a very different approach.
Very much so. And I often think that is what leadership is in its essence, is just refusing to let other voices control the pattern of how you're going to do things, and seeking the one thing that's necessary and letting whatever energy comes from that dictate the energy that you provide to others, you know. And that's really one of the hardest things, is just to be, have all these stakeholders, you know, all these people who have valid points and have different histories, and we all want to do things and we want to see it get done, you know. But the problem is everybody has a different one of those that they want to do, and the church can't exist in this kind of hodgepodge of different ministries. It must be a place of the contemplative life, and then that frees people up to then go and have their own active life. You know, that is a difficult thing, but it is right. That is really the only thing at the end of the day.
Yeah. Last week I was meeting with a guy who's about to plant a church in the next year, and he knew that I planted a church. And so he's like, what would you, you know, there's some things you would encourage me to think about. And among other things, one of the things I said is the first year is going to be really hard, because no matter how much you tell your launch team and the people you're going to start the church with, if you have 100 people in the room, you probably have 175 different views of what church means, you know. And then you say, we're going to have worship. There's 100 something different views on what worship is. And so you are going to have to stand strong and stand firm and kind of take all the hits and take the waves coming in to just steadily stay the course until you can be fully live into where God has you. And you're going to have people that come and go. You're going to have, it's going to be an opportunity to feel rejected, an opportunity to feel betrayed, because these people that you thought would never leave your side in a million years are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even really say goodbye. They just sent you a text and said, we're going back to this church or whatever. And I think if you haven't done your inner work,
mm-hmm.
you'll probably in pastoral ministry go one of two ways. You'll either go towards the really hardcore way where it's like my way or the highway, and you become a very dominating leader. And people will respond to that, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of people want that sort of leadership, because it's
increasingly
easier,
yeah,
for them. They don't have to think. They just do whatever this person says.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way. Another kind of extreme of where you can go is you're trying to please everybody.
Yeah.
And if you haven't done the internal work to be secure in who you are and know what God's called you toward, you're going to go in one of those two directions. And the domineering one usually just damages people in the church really bad. The other one totally damages you
mm-hmm.
more than anything. It's not good for the church either, but it right. really hurts you, because you're never pleasing anyone.
That's right.
And it can just destroy you inside. So I think to be in that place of I don't need to do any of this stuff. I am absolutely secure and beloved of God. And if this ministry is taken away,
mm-hmm.
it's okay.
That's right. It was never mine to begin with.
It's not mine. It's not my identity.
And to stay relationally connected to people and to not despair, you know, through those things, that is the work of leadership right there.
And it's never about you. I think that's the thing. Maybe I'm starting to realize is like, yeah, none of this stuff is ever about me. But that's our tendency, is when something happens, whatever happens, whether it's good or bad, we think, oh, that's about me. Mm-mm. I did something good, or, oh, that's bad. That's, what did I do?
I'm a failure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All your comments, I feel like too soon, even though I planted 9 years ago, it's still too fresh. But let's go back to you as we close out. Your walk with the Lord and realizing many of these things now, walking them in them a number of years. In your journey now, in your formation now, what's the Lord showing you? What's become sweet to you, or what is he up to in your life right now?
Mm. Well, I think to even go back to what we were just talking about a minute ago, I'm still learning that stuff. You know, I have good days. I have bad days. I have days where I get discouraged because of something somebody said. So I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I don't think we ever arrive. But I think the thing that I'm most present to right now is something. Well, a couple of things I'll share. One is I pray as best I can, and I don't do it perfectly every day, but the daily office. To where I'm praying four times a day, a set prayer. And what's always included in that is the Lord's Prayer. And I found praying the Lord's Prayer to be so formative because I keep coming back to these core concepts of not my will, but thy will be done. That's just so foundational. And then, Lord, I'm trusting you to provide for me. And then, may I be a person of forgiveness, both receiving it and giving it. And then I pray that all that I encounter would not lead to temptation, but actually all the things I encounter would be about delivering me into deeper and deeper life in you. And so the Lord's Prayer just continues to shape me. And the last couple of months, it's been the forgiveness part. As I pray that, the Lord has just been bringing to me things that I maybe hadn't ever fully forgiven. Or maybe I had, to the extent that I knew it, but there was more. And him just inviting me into more place of forgiveness. The other thing I would just simply say is I feel like the Lord is inviting me into deeper places of simplicity. I like complexity. For a variety of reasons. But I just feel him continuing to call me to a place of simplicity. This really is just this incredibly simple life that I have with him, of being aware of him and responding to him, trying to eliminate distractions in my life, and not overcomplicating it.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for sharing your heart and your story with us. And I would love to just close out on bragging on you for a moment by just thanking you for being who you are, brother. You have shaped so many people that are connected to the society through your sicknesses that you've had, of which there have been several episodes, I guess you could say, and including through seasons of COVID and all that kind of stuff, when the Formation Society and the work that you've done for all of us and creating these opportunities has been magnificent. So thank you for all that you've done. Thanks for modeling what we're talking about today. And I love you, brother. Thankful for you.
Love you too. Love you too. I receive your words, and I'm grateful that we get to do all these things, and thanks be to God.
Amen.
Amen.
Well, thank you for joining us, friends, for this first part of the formation stories of Ted and Gray, I guess we could call it. And Ted, thankful for you. And we can serve our audience, though, by reminding them that there are things that are coming up at the Spiritual Formation Society. And there's always things coming up at the Spiritual Formation Society. So go to SFS.com. spaz.org. That's the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona's website, and you'll find all kinds of resources there for an upcoming event, a spiritual director, or whatever it is that you may need.
Thanks, everybody. See you in part 2.